Rising sea levels, tidal surges, coastal erosion and inundation of communities in the Torres Strait are close to terminating sacred sites and burial grounds that connect ancestry heritage. Under the Covenant of Civil and Political Rights, the claimants believe that Australia has an obligation to protect their culture, as well as rights to family and life. This world-first case has the potential to force substantial action from our government to transition away from fossil fuels and address this climate emergency. Lisa Jameson is the Australia Organiser for Queensland at the non-for-profit environmental advocacy organisation 350 that aims to end fossil fuels by building a global grassroots movement. Lisa recently travelled to the Torres Strait to observe the current landscape and develop the case that will be brought forward to the UN.
I recently visited two islands, so Musick, which is also known as York Island, and Boigu. And these are low-lying islands. They really are seeing every day the effects of rising sea levels. Musick is 3 kilometres long and 8 kilometres wide, so it's a small island, and they're seeing the effects every day. I've been campaigning for climate justice for the Pacific Islands. I'm Pacific Islander by descent. I'm Samoan. And actually going up to the Torres Strait and seeing that these islands are also vulnerable to climate change, it really affected me. I didn't realize how bad it was up there. And I was able to see how impacted some of the grave sites were. And I think that affected me the most, just knowing the connection that local people have to their ancestors and knowing that a lot of them have said they will not leave. If the sea levels rise, many of the elders will not leave.
Lisa speaks about 350 and their mission to spread awareness about this story.
Our role has been to amplify the story, and we're calling on Australia and Australians to really stand in solidarity with those in the Torres Strait. Basically, we've been working with locals to see that their stories are heard across the nation. Often in the climate movement, you won't hear about those stories. We will also have a long-term relationship with those who are the authors just to support their work, because it's just starting. You know, the claim was only lodged on Monday this week, so there's reports of up to 3 years for it to be, you know, reviewed and have a resolution. We want to make sure that we continue the momentum in sharing this story.
Heidi Norman, Research Fellow and Professor of Social and Political Sciences at UTS, puts it down to this.
What happens to country is a human rights issue.
This issue doesn't stop at the Torres Strait. Coal and fossil fuel emissions from various infrastructure developments in the Greater Western Sydney region are also having an effect on Indigenous land. Professor Norman speaks about how we can learn from Indigenous practices when it comes to land regeneration and how her research fosters Indigenous perspectives through environmental initiatives across the Sydney region.
We recently ran a seminar where we brought scholars and community practitioners, if you like, together. So we heard from Darubbin Local Aboriginal Land Council. That's a land council that covers the territory from Western Sydney through to the Blackheath up on the Blue Mountains and sort of north and south of Sydney in that sort of Western Sydney kind of area. Darubbin Land Council, they're the largest landholders, private landholders in that area. It's also an area that's under significant development pressure, and there's development plans led by the Greater Sydney Commission. And so the Land Council are poised to insist that there's a kind of imprint, an Aboriginal imprint, as the development takes place in Western Sydney. So that's an exciting proposition, and they have some ideas about how their values as Aboriginal landholders are reflected in the plans and development. And so renewable energies is one suggestion. With the Land Council, I know they mentioned they're, as the biggest landholders in Western Sydney, there's possibility for carbon sequestration, of thinking about the values of their land holdings and emphasis on that their land holdings are also about ensuring cultural protection and the well-being and security of their Aboriginal membership. And Western Sydney is also the biggest Aboriginal population in the country. So they are in a position where they are, the Land Rights Act does require them to derive benefit from their land. And so that might include development, but it also has to capture the values and ethics of the Aboriginal membership.
The conversation surrounding the climate crisis, the impact on Torres Strait Islander communities, and whether Indigenous voices are supported in policy making is a topical concern following the upcoming election. I asked Lisa what constituents should be aware of when voting for climate action this weekend.
I would encourage people to look at the climate policies of all the parties and make an informed vote regarding climate action and making sure that we keep under 1.5 degrees in global warming. So that means no new fossil projects. We need to stop Adani. And, yeah, basically we need to see a just, fast transition to 100% renewable energy. In my opinion, it should be done by 2030, but none of the parties have stated that. It's a very critical time, and we really need to put pressure on the government to make sure that we do our part.
On the other hand, Professor Norman shed some light on Labor's aim to recognise Indigenous rights at a constitutional level.
What the Labor Party have outlined in their Aboriginal Affairs agenda is recognition of the key elements of the Uluru Statement from the Heart. So they have endorsed a voice, whether that be constitutionally enshrined, but what they have said is that they will push for a voice and move towards that being constitutionally enshrined. How the Labor Party have conceptualised their Aboriginal Affairs policy is resetting the relationship. There's wide consensus that the current Aboriginal Affairs policy is a disaster. It has been reduced to a competitive, tender-based arrangement that delimits the authority and the power of local-level Aboriginal organisations to directly run services and have a say over the priorities at the community level. So I think, you know, the Labor Party is advocating this resetting the relationship, and that amounts to a greater understanding of the role of Aboriginal people with agency and power and authority to solve your own problems with government support.